Hello and welcome. After far too long a gap, here at last is the new Words with Jam podcast for you. We bring you Disappearing Acts by Max Orkis. Something very strange is happening to Maria. She's behaving quite out of character.
Disappearing Acts by Max Orkis. Maria got the feeling she was beginning to lose touch with the past. It started transpiring quite suddenly. Not that she could brag about knowledge of any depth in matters of history, or had ever had particularly vivid recollections of her childhood. Nor had she sensed a strong connection with the rest of the universe. Yet, dwelling on her little life, cooped up in her own world, Maria had always perceived herself, though subconsciously, as in some way inseparable from her environment and from affairs which had to do with her personally. She'd always been confident in the coherence of events, and certain details of her own biography appeared clear and even inevitable. The actions she undertook in the present naturally stemmed from the past and led into the future. In the chain of reactions that unfolded, one link affected the next, and without the fourth, there could hardly be 131st. She'd never given any of this much thought. Everything had simply always been right, and then abruptly ceased to be so. It all began when she got the impression of having forgotten something insignificant, in the same way you can't remember whether you closed the window when leaving. But soon, these unpleasant doubts dissipate, because after all, it isn't really all that important. In the worst-case scenario, the sill might get wet. Remarkably, though, Maria was starting to feel like she couldn't recall whether she'd shut some window 10 or 20 years ago and where it might have been. That's why the sensation of presumed oblivion was becoming increasingly more nagging. To no avail, did she try to convince herself that presently the potential non-closure of a metaphorical window, what exactly she'd forgotten she couldn't remember for the life of her either, did not matter one bit. At first, Maria wouldn't have been able to put her own feelings on the subject into words. It wasn't even until much later that she came a tad closer to realising she was having some weird memory lapses. She hadn't actually quite correlated her vague and initial elusive difficulties and that phenomenon. If someone shrewder had guessed she was experiencing something out of the ordinary and asked her what was going on, she would have been incapable of giving a straight explanation, mumbling that something was off, but she couldn't quite put her finger on it. But no one seemed to notice anything, and she was acting the way she normally would, doing what she had to do, and trying not to pay attention to her newly discovered innermost suspicions, which were now surfacing more frequently. The telephone went off. She just stood there for a moment, looking around. On the third ring, she bent down, picked up a purse, and unbuckled it with a series of apt jerks. While she was rummaging through its contents, the phone jingling, there was a puzzled frown on her face. She was elbow deep in the tiny purse, ploughing through potpourri, excavating all kinds of stuff. Who'd have thought that this bag would turn out to be so roomy? It fit her entire forearm on top of what felt like a wallet, tampons, pen, makeup, gum, lint, matches, and a bunch of other minute items she'd have to see to identify. At last she stumbled upon the phone. She was about to flip it open, but it gave one dying vibration and shut up. For another quiet moment, she stared at the one missed call message on the screen. Then the phone buzzed again, startling her and making her almost drop it as she struggled to flip it ajar like her own lips. "Hello?" she cleared her throat. There was quite a bit of background noise. "Hi," a man's voice rang out. "Maria?" he double-checked. She hit the same high note. Yes. "Is everything okay?" he asked. "Where are you?" She was buying time, stumped, looking around, trying not to panic. "Did you oversleep?" She took her time before answering that one. Yeah, I suppose so. "Is that why you're being so laconic?" There was the cacophony of a crowded public place impaled by the shrill screams of a baby in the background. "So are you going to stay on the couch?" Did she need to tell him she wasn't on the couch? "Or are you going to come and pick me up?" he continued, because I can grab a cab. Her eyes, scanning the corridor, skipped to an erect photo. It had been right in front of her the whole time, under the expansive mirror. It was a picture of a young man with curly ginger hair. He wasn't hot, or even handsome. Disarmingly cute, rather, like a smart-looking dog. A piece of paper was lying next to the photo. It was folded into a yawn, or shouting on mute, perhaps. She could make out the word itinerary in its gape. She picked it up and peeked inside. Maria? Baby? Are you sure you're okay? She snapped out of it. Yeah. No, everything's fine. I'm coming to get you. Don't worry. She made for the door and twisted the knob. Don't lock yourself out again. She stopped cold in her tracks. Maybe in your jacket pocket? She took the nearest jacket off the hanger and sure enough, there were the keys, in the first pocket she stuck her hand into. Maria frowned again, reaching for the door. Shouldn't you put some shoes on? The man went on. I've been right about everything, wasn't I? Oh, I know you all too well. You're so distracted. Lost for words, she half shrugged, shook her head and slipped into the first pair of shoes she saw. Now she really did want to see him. The more time elapsed, the less subconscious these loomings got. Maria still didn't understand anything or know how to express these concerns, but unlike before, the very presence of these glimpses of intuition was indisputable. Though she had not the faintest clue as to their actual content, and especially whether she needed to be worried, she was already powerless to shake her unusual feelings off. Something was definitely wrong, and this tormenting thought, by that time already a thought, was hot on her heels. Soon, not only was this sensation shadowing her, but it had also begun to take shape. To be precise, a sort of formlessness had cropped up at first. Form in the shape of gaps and blanks subsequently evolved in its place. These voids had once been filled with comprehension. The contours of comprehension depended on the people, objects, events, and phenomena it had been bound to. Now it seemed as though, in each separate instance, the piece containing understanding had been torn out, and only a hole was left instead. As time went by, Maria was already able to spot with a naked eye that these holes were rife and growing in numbers at a frightening rate. From unintelligible, illusory, and abstract, her incomprehension turned well-defined and even palpable, though conversely intangible. Thus, for instance, not that Maria no longer remembered, but simply couldn't make head or tail of what this or that episode, concept, action, or occurrence had to do with her. How come everything was so and not the other way round? Why someone's words had to mean something to her, and ultimately, how the things around her tied in with a given context. She stopped recognizing people who were on a first-name basis with her, and familiar with certain intimate aspects of her private life she herself had no idea about. She couldn't make sense of anything anymore, and gradually panic set in. Are we having fun yet? Isn't this fun? The man in the doorway raised his voice. He must have been taking good care of his skin his entire life and thought he was quite the charmer. He was standing there, leaning in on his elbow, his pretty dark-haired head resting in his hand. The light shone from the side, illuminating only half his face, which meant the stud must have positioned himself this way deliberately for the dramatic effect. What the... No, actually, I'm not having any fun, Maria said. He looked like he was about to cry, then burst out laughing. I know, exactly. Me neither. I've hated every second of it. This guy definitely had issues. Must be a midlife crisis case or something. Uh-huh, she said. So have I. All 12 and a half of them. I know, he repeated. Me too. I'm not having any fun either. But that's the whole point, don't you see? Maria shook her head. No. That's the beauty of it, he ignored her. I love not having any fun with you. I'd rather hate every minute of my life with you than without you. Is this some kind of joke? She asked. He opened his mouth again, but she preempted. Whoa, take it easy there. Look, your excitement's very cute and everything, and your enthusiasm, pathetic as it is, for some inexplicable reason I feel it's sincere. Sweet. But, who are you? Look, I know. I'm sorry. I messed up, he said. I made a mistake. I'll change. I'm going to change. I swear. She paused for a moment, and then as firmly as possible, while trying not to yell, But I don't know you. But that's it. Maria, isn't there any way you could forgive me? Maria. At the outset, when space and time did not consist entirely of holes, she still couldn't tell what was happening to her, and whether anything was happening at all. Incomprehension was just starting to seep in, and it wasn't until it had finally engulfed her that the idea sank in. The inconsistency of the present was connected to the loss of the past. Later on, Maria put two and two together by way of logical reasoning, which, she gathered, remained unshakable under any circumstances. It was all quite simple. If, say, some man is showing her a photograph in which she's kissing him, then it's not the first time she's seen him. But since right now is the first time she's ever seen him, this segment of the past must have vanished into thin air. And since it's gone, something has to have been there to go missing to begin with. In cases such as this, she tried to pretend as if nothing was wrong, hoping that no one would figure it out. And indeed, nobody seemed to have caught on. Relying on instinct, she behaved as she imagined she might be expected to in one situation or another. Something drove her to lie. Probably the awareness that without deceit, she'd be forced to non-act. And then there'd be nothing to be continued, and there wouldn't be a future, because it grows out of the present, which is in turn rooted in the past, which at that point was already waning before her very eyes. Thus, for instance, a door she walked through would burn down and fade away. Little could faze Maria by that time, but this incineration and dissolution was starting to look a bit too much like a hunt. That wasn't what got her scared, though. She'd drawn a complete and utter blank on the past. That's what did the trick. Maria kept scrambling to build a future. In the end, that's something no one can really do without. She was no longer able to make out what she was doing, nor could she stop to think about what she was meant to be doing. She was literally following her nose because behind her, where she had no nose, there was nothing left to sniff anyway. She was quickly running out of the present too, and she pressed onwards into the future. In a sense, she was already living in the future. At the rate she was racing, it had drawn so close that with each step, she'd crossed the margins of the present. One fine moment, all this movement came to a halt. Maria was standing there as if nailed to the spot. She watched the door into the future, that's how she would now dub each opening, turn black and crumple up, as if crushed and quickly masticated by some enormous invisible jaws and then gulped down. With it went the house walls and everything else. Now there was nothing around her but pitch black, odorous emptiness. Maria was stuck on a tiny area of the floor she'd once associated with a kitchen, which had been a microscopic part of what presently seemed like an inconceivably vast world, with all its interweaving complexities and diversity, and all that remained of it was she, hopping from one foot to another, hot linoleum roasting her bare soles. At that moment, in her mind's eye, she conjured up a flood. She was standing on a small island, disappearing under the inexorable waves of emptiness closing in. The telephone rang. Victor opened his eyes. He dove out of his semi-slumber and gagged on the barrel of the Colt. The metal knocked his teeth on the way out. He damn near squeezed the trigger and cussed. Saliva had gathered on his chin. He wiped it off. His rough stubble scraped the damp skin on the back of his hand. The phone was ringing. He kept sitting on the floor, leaning back against the warm marble fireplace. Then he felt a burn, a blister between the index and middle fingers. The cigarette butt was almost cached. Victor cursed. The filter was unwilling to unpeel as he attempted to shake it the hell off into the fireplace. It spat resignedly on the carpet. As he set off, limping for the incessantly buzzing phone, his leg asleep. There was grunting and more venomous swearing. Once he'd made it across the room, he ran his hand down his face and flipped the receiver with the barrel of the Colt. He caught it rather deftly with one hand, peered at it as if reckoning who it might be, and hit it with the muzzle of the pistol. Another several seconds, Victor savoured the quiet that had been restored. "What do you want?" Victor's voice was hoarse and hostile. He immediately remembered having forgotten to clear his throat. He should fucking quit smoking anyway, for the hell of it, on principle. That made him chuckle, choke, and cough. "Victor, Robert, your agent, remember? What is this? What's the matter? I haven't been able to get hold of you for 2 days. Where have you been?" Victor winced queasily and scratched his head with the muzzle of the gun. "Been busy. Working, I hope. Why haven't you been picking up? Had enough on my mind. Why aren't you at the meeting? Did you oversleep?" Robert was getting more and more wound up. "I'm going to rip your head off, you deadbeat." "Don't bother," Victor said. "In the shower. Now. Move it. And then get over to Catherine's. If she calls, I'll tell her you got stuck in traffic. Listen, am I going to have to bail you out forever?" "Oh, depends on how you define forever." "What's that supposed to mean? How long have we known each other? Haven't I always been a good friend to you, Victor? Don't you think I deserve some gratitude? Have you ever thanked me? Huh? Huh? No." "Gratitude, my ass. Made bank off of me and now you're pulling a guilt trip? Okay, I don't have time to butt heads with you. Here's how it's going to go. You're going to take the manuscript, get in the car, and be at Catherine's office no later than 40 minutes. Maybe she'll still see you. Got it, Robert?" "What?" "Go screw yourself, Robert." "You..." The agent sighed in an effort to keep it together. "Listen, man. You know how much I love you, right? Let's not fight, okay? Everyone's stressed out. I understand. I'm not stupid. You've got creative pains. I have deadlines. Don't put me on the spot, huh? There's only a little left to go. You'll go to the meeting, hand in the manuscript, get some sleep. I'm not going anywhere. Don't start again. When's it going to end, huh?" "Like a kid, I swear to God." Victor could hear his interlocutor's heart spring right out of his chest and splat, smack down on the floor, spraying his slacks and dress shoes with blood. Victor grinned. You're not done again, are you?" Robert hissed. "Why aren't you saying anything? Have you finished the book or not? Answer me." "It's done, all right. Stop with the drama." "Then why don't you want to go? Where's the manuscript?" "I don't have it," Victor announced. "What do you mean you don't have it? You said it was finished." "It is." "But it's gone?" "Yes." "Where is it?" "It's all burned up," Victor said.
"What?"
"Burned."
"Burned?"
Robert bleated in falsetto.
"Yeah.
The only copy. The one and only."
"When?"
"Half an hour ago."
"How did it get burned? Why?"
"To ashes. Because I'd put it in the fireplace and lit it. That's why it got burned."
"But why?"
"It was cold."
"What is this, some kind of sick joke?" Robert pleaded.
"No," Victor said. "Listen, I'm tired. I'm going to let you go. No offence. Don't ever call me anymore, okay? Or actually, call if you want to. Up to you." He tossed the phone in the fire. It produced a dull clank as it bounced off the carcass of an old typewriter. Maria had vanished, but not once and for all. This consideration, as well as what went on with her afterwards, amazed her more than the actual disappearance, which was strange enough in itself. Now she would drift in and out of non-being, re-emerging again at different junctures of her reality. When, for example, she reappeared in the past, she'd relive the events she'd been part of when she was 12, 30, 16, or 25 years old. Sometimes, certain events took on a slightly or even completely different turn than before, and didn't play out the way they had the first time around. Occasionally, other actors involved changed too. When she popped up in the future, she'd immediately recognise herself. She knew for sure that it was she, Maria, only older. She easily guessed her own age, though it be advanced, in spite of her disappearance, which hadn't let her live to see it. Once, having turned up in the late past, she instantly sensed that it was the point of her disappearance. Had it been in her power, she would much rather have died of the sheer terror of it. This time, she also ended up vanishing, though now it wasn't a giant closet moth devouring the kitchen, along with everything else, but as real a fire as they come. Everything was going up in flames, melting and evaporating all over the place. Luckily, she didn't burn alive, having first managed to suffocate on acrid smoke rolling out of wood soaked with chemicals, and a bit earlier, something heavy had collapsed on her head. She lost consciousness. That's how yet another of her reappearances was cut short. She wasn't too upset, though. Overall, with the exception of that frightening scene, Maria liked her new state. It had the feel of a game. While dissolving back to non-being, she would normally try to predict which part of her life she might pop into next time. In the beginning, she even got pleasantly scared when she came up with the hypothesis that she may have been kidnapped by extraterrestrials, just as in some book she'd read in her early teens. She was compelled to brush this silliness aside, though, because what took place during the following reappearance suggested an altogether different reading. It had to be a hint, but to what? One time, upon re-emerging, she discovered that her appearance was totally foreign. Wrong hair and eye colour, facial features, breast size, the shape of the nipples, the thickness of nails, height, curves, weight, finger length, tongue, earlobe, skin, birthmarks, scent. In a word, it was not her physique. She proceeded to thoroughly explore this new, unfamiliar body from head to toe, checking its sensitivity, reflexes, reaction time, the whole range of senses, employing all the methods she could think of. From testing the heart rate, eyesight, hearing and smell, to a bit of pinching, gentle slapping and caressing. She wound up pleased but unhappy. It was clear that this other person's body she was currently in was much better and much more beautiful than her own. As a woman, Maria felt that her self-esteem was hurt. To add injury to insult, she was bothered by the fact that she'd been led on by this attractive figure and gorgeous head into quenching its secret desires. But that wasn't what mattered most. While taking shots at working out in her mind where she could pop up next, Maria had no trouble imagining anything at all. She even allowed for the possibility of being able to dream of herself perishing in an attempt to escape from a fire. Nor did she rule out the likelihood of a fantasy where she appeared as someone else. She had heard of reincarnation. By contrast, what she'd experienced while in the body of that other woman couldn't have been a figment of her own imagination, pure and simple. Nothing like that could have ever entered her head in any state. With her entire being, she sensed that her mind could never have engendered anything so utterly alien. If it had been a dream, it was not one of hers. This latter insight got her thinking even more intently, and another inkling crept into her soul. That reminded her of how this whole disappearing story had started out in the first place, except that the things that were presently happening seemed far more captivating. After taking a closer look at herself, she acknowledged for the first time that she was basically leading a triple existence. Whenever she visited the past, she knew what she had to be doing at any second, every step of the way. She could tell that all of her actions were correct and would bring about a logical outcome. She wouldn't even be able to behave any other way, and always did what she was meant to do, even when the circumstances didn't match what had come to pass the first time. There were no contradictions, and the coherence of it all remained intact. When Maria popped up in the future, she also knew what to do, and was able to recall everything that had ever happened to her, from her childhood up to the moment she emerged in, although she wasn't supposed to have any of those memories because of her disappearance. A future was something she didn't have. It had been ruled out by her disappearance, which nipped her life in mid-sentence. On yet another level, wherever she resurfaced, she always remembered about her disappearance and had a twofold view of what was going on. That of a direct participant in the events, the centre of which she'd be swept into, and that of an observer. As such, not only was she aware of what was in store for her, but, thanks to her sufficiently extensive experience with reappearances, she also bore in mind at least one spare version of the potential development of most situations she might encounter. Once, having re-emerged in her pre-disappearance, she couldn't recall the first thing about her favourite book, apart from the author's name, Victor. At the same time, she realised that she'd anticipated that she'd forget it and remembered which items had slipped her mind. She dashed to her bedside table, then turned the entire apartment upside down but couldn't find the book. Meanwhile, she did not exist in the full sense of the word, for she'd vanished. These reflections were interrupted by a return to non-being and resumed once she'd reappeared. It flashed through her mind that her disappearances and reappearance were similar to how, after finishing a paragraph, the reader would close the tome and then open it again on a different page as the bookmark would shift each time. Quite often, not even inside the piece itself, but into the rougher drafts and the author's unused notes. Then she reverted to her triplicity, thinking that her initial hunch had been accurate. It was all reminiscent of a hallucination. Just as in the case of recollections, of the partaker, the spectator, and the vanished, these visions were triple-layered. As the participant, she evoked her onlooker self. As the onlooker, she induced herself as the participants. As the vanished, she remembered herself as the one who recalls. The same could be said about the hallucinations. She could have dreamed up her disappearance. After vanishing, she could have been fantasizing about her disappearances and reappearances. Or all of that, including Maria herself, could have been reverie belonging to someone else. On that thought, Maria seemed to have heard an explosion or thunder. She couldn't have vouched for it. She was too preoccupied with her non-existence. She felt that she'd disappeared again. This time for good, irreversibly, having diffused completely. Now she was free to move in any direction, by leaps and bounds, far and wide, at her own choosing. But that wasn't necessary anymore, because she already was everywhere and always. Order and memory no longer mattered at all.